Welcome, Matt Halala. Thank you for coming to Wrangell. I think this is a great opportunity for you to learn about communities in Southeast Alaska and for also for us to learn a little bit about you. So let's start off with just tell us something about yourself, where you're from, a little bit about your background.
Great. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. My wife and I, Stacy, are originally from Soldotna, and I was born and raised on the Kenai Peninsula, actually born in Anchorage, but raised on the Kenai Peninsula. And my future wife and I met in junior high there in Soldotna. We were graduates of Soldotna High School in 1988. And we got married about a year and a half out of high school. And my working career began as a commercial fisherman. And I was a gill netter as a nine-year-old on a beach site on a little island called Chisholm Island across Cook Inlet. And then we eventually got into drifting, drift gill netting, my brother and I. We moved the operation over to Bristol Bay when I was 14, and I became a skipper of my dad's boat at 18. And I did that until I was about 23 or 24, something like that. And Stacy and I, after getting married, I got into medical school, and we moved to Chicago, had our first child there. And then I did my residency at Georgetown University in Fairfax in the D.C. area, had our second child, and we moved back to Alaska in 1998, where we opened clinics and surgery centers and got involved in the wonderful career that is foot and ankle surgery was my world.
Podiatry, then,
yes,
right?
Yep,
okay.
Yep, podiatry, yep. Podiatric foot and ankle surgery. And did that, just retired 2 years ago. And I got fairly heavily involved in other businesses and things like property development, commercial real estate, patent acquisition and things. So I went back to graduate school about 6 years ago and got an MBA at Arizona State University. And that was my midlife crisis. That's what Stacy said. And we were always involved tangentially in business, but excuse me, in politics, in supporting candidates that we thought were good for Alaska. And we have a very strong passion for the well-being of Alaska, and in particular, its next generation. And we raised our kids here in Alaska. We are now helping to raise four grandkids, which is wonderful. And Alaska has changed in the last 30-ish years. It's not quite the land of opportunity that it once was. And you can see that in our schools. You can see that in the cost, the unaffordability for young people to stay in Alaska. And we're leaving. They're now leaving Alaska for other what sadly economically is greener pastures. Mm-hmm. And we can turn that around. There is no excuse a state like ours that is so rich in natural resources and so rich in so many assets that we're not more prosperous. So that's why I'm running for governor.
Okay. Yeah. So you have, it sounds like you have a really broad experience base.
Yes.
From commercial fishing to being a physician and also just an investment in terms of generations of yourself and your kids and your grandkids.
Right.
And an investment in the future of Alaska in
yes.
that way. So my next question was basically, why are you running for governor? Is there anything more you'd like to add to that?
Yes. So like I said, we've been involved in the political process a bit. I was placed on the state medical board about 5 years ago by our current governor and got a little bit more involved in policy making, regulation changes, and it became much more evident that we need leaders from the private sector that are not enamored with the morass and complexity of the process of government, that is very burdensome. It's stifling progress at this point. We are so overburdened with regulation and procedure that industry is choosing other parts of the country, other parts of the world to invest. And so what we've been asking for as Alaskans are like-minded people that are from the private sector to step forward to serve in government. And that we feel that there's an issue of the revolving door, the conveyor belt of the bureaucrat, that, well, I was in this department, it's my turn to be governor. But they, if they ever had a sense of what it meant to make payroll as a business owner, to try to survive in the wild, well, they've lost it if they've been in government more than just a few years. And very few bureaucrats can translate their experience in government into something innovative, useful, that really partners with industry to provide the high-paid job opportunities our young people need to stay here. So if I was noticing and making note of people that were announcing they were going to run for governor, and every single one of them were primarily from the bureaucracy. Not that I don't admire many of them for many different reasons, but it is, we need a paradigm shift in who is leading, why they're leading. And again, we need people that are not looking for a new career. They don't need the income of serving government. They are not held hostage to special interests because they need their money to run for government. And I can offer that. I've turned away money from certain industries because I want to speak with credibility on the topics. And in particular in the fisheries, I've been offered money, like to support my campaign, but I don't want to diminish my credibility in discussing some of these hard topics. So I'm answering a call, and the vision is prosperity. That is the vision. We have to arrive at prosperity for the benefit of the next generation.
Okay, well, you have a background in fisheries, and so I wanted to ask you this. Commercial fisheries are a large part of the economy in Southeast Alaska and the whole state. Subsistence and sport fishing are also very important in our culture and our lifestyle. So what are your thoughts on access to fisheries for all Alaskans? And then also, how might you support the seafood industry and the sustainability of fisheries into the future?
Right. So the fisheries are so incredibly important. And I think just recently, tourism has just overtaken our commercial fisheries as being the primary job producer in our state. But it's still incredibly important. There are lots of aspects that the commercial fisheries cross-subsidize our shipping. And I was unaware of that, that the backhaul of our shippers is often filled with pollock, a lot of our higher volume fishery products. And that keeps the cost of shipping down for our goods that are imported. So it's incredibly important. I think public awareness across the state, the importance of our commercial fisheries needs to be communicated more. I think the industry is now recognizing that and getting more engaged. So that's very important. I think the fisheries management. Now, we have a constitutional obligation to manage our fisheries, as with all of our other fish and game in particular, to sustained and abundant sustained yield. And that requires a science-based management approach and not a political-based management approach. And that needs to be advocated from the highest office in appointing people that have that skill set and that domain of expertise to be useful if they're going to be on the board. They can't be political appointments, and we need to take advantage of new and more emerging technologies to help us better manage our fish and game. And I did have the opportunity to visit Unalaska just about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I was speaking with a young trawl skipper. And he said, with the bycatch controversy, right, and it's for a reason, there's controversy yeah. there and things to be improved. He said the most meaningful thing that has happened, and it's a technology to reduce bycatch, is Starlink communications. And I'm like, really, how does that work? Why would that improve bycatch? He said, typically, if a trawl boat gets in meaningful bycatch, that wouldn't be reported to the fleet for at least 5 to 7 days. After it's been offloaded, after the observers count it and all this stuff, then the fisheries will put out a notice of what sector or what area to avoid. But that would be days later. He said right now, they can broadcast, you know, bycatch to the neighboring vessels that are in the area to avoid this area right then, right when it's happening. So it's a more precise management technique. And, you know, there's a lot of optimism with this stuff to improve the fishery. But the public relations thing is very important. I think a lot of Alaskans in the interior, South Central, where I'm from, are unaware of how critical our state relies on the commercial fisheries. Southeast understands that. And it's one of the things I've discovered that I was unaware of coming from South Central Alaska is the diversity of the fisheries down here. Mm-hmm. From the commercial dive harvesting. That just is nothing we even think about in Cook Inlet or Bristol Bay. And that one fishing family or one fisherman can be involved in all of the above, long lining, fixed gear, drift gill net, set gill net, shrimping, crabbing, all of the things throughout the year, all from one area, one port. And that's an amazing thing. And I understand a lot of the fishermen are saying that the way to survive downturns in one fishery is to be diversified across more than a few. Now, that's really difficult for a young fisherman to be able to buy into multiple fisheries. And that's my priority, are young people having opportunities so that they can stay, live, and maybe raise families in Alaska.
That's kind of ubiquitous across Alaska that we, you know, regardless of what your job is, I mean, you yourself have been all over the map in your
right.
careers over the years. And that's becoming that way, as you mentioned, with the commercial fishing industry, that those permits, you need to have more than one,
right?
Let's say one trick pony, to use a phrase. But those are expensive.
Yes.
To come by and deer to keep.
Permits, the gear, yep.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting and refreshing to hear that you're interested in that for the future and the upcoming fishermen coming out of our communities here in Southeast and across the state.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I, you know, our state is so huge. One of the most interesting and rewarding things about running for statewide office is that I get to travel all around the state to each region, hear from the people about what is top of mind for them. Obviously, transportation infrastructure is a huge priority of mine. And people in South Central, other parts of the state, forget about the Alaska Marine Highway System. And that is in the top one or two things I hear from people in Southeast is a concern for the deterioration and the diminished availability of that system. And, you know, it's people don't think of it as roads, bridges, you know, rail, et cetera. It's a huge part of how Southeast survives. And that needs to be advocated for. Again, there is some optimism with the money that's being infused from the federal government across all of our coastal areas with port expansions, port revitalization, and the home porting of new vessels. So that needs to somehow be leveraged and to cross-subsidize the need for our, you know, public ferry system, the marine highway system. So a lot of ideas there, but that has to be on the top of the list of things our state takes care of.
I'm really glad that you brought that up. That was one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because the marine highway system, not only is it our highway getting from island to island here in Southeast, but it's also an economic driver. We
right.
get a lot of our goods and services. You've only been on the island for less than 24 hours, but we don't
right.
have car dealerships. We don't have. So if we need to take a car in for a repair, we need to put it on the ferry and go down to Ketchikan or up to Juneau or.
Right.
It's really difficult now. I was looking at an old edition of the Wrangell Sentinel for other reasons, but from 1976, I think it was. And there was a ferry schedule in there that had a northbound and a southbound 6 days out of the week. And now we get one northbound and one southbound per week.
Right.
When they're running.
Right, right.
And the number of ships have diminished. So what would your commitment be to the maintenance of the fleet, but also mm-hmm. perhaps getting another ship or two for Southeast Alaska to do the
right.
The Southeast run and also down to Bellingham.
Right.
You know?
Most all of these things that have deteriorated, fallen apart to an extent because of lack of revenue, right? A lack of monies. And if we focus on the vision of prosperity for Alaska again, through a couple of strategies, and these strategies work everywhere they've been tried to get prosperity back into an area. One of them is cheap, abundant energy. Cheap and abundant energy is the fertile soil for the seeds of industry. Okay, so that revs up the engine that is the economy of Alaska. The other part of that also is transportation infrastructure. So we need to jump at every opportunity with public-private partnerships. Sometimes it's just the private sector that will build roads. Miners and mining conglomerates build roads to their resource, right? If it's, you know, economically feasible for them, if the project is profitable and it's in their plan and they can do it, like Kinross did that with Moncho Mine, recently built an 18-mile road, didn't require any state money, but it did require a cooperative tribal corporation, a cooperative state, and the permitting process needs to be made more simple. So getting our economy going again diversifies and improves the revenue stream, and then everything is possible if we know it's a priority. So keeping it top of mind that the marine highway system for our state is critical, as critical as roads and rail, is keeping your eye on the ball. But what we're suffering is the consequence of allowing our state to slip into the culture of no. We call it the culture of no, where, well, that mine, that logging operation, that, you know, maybe we don't need to do that anymore because there are loud voices that don't like it. Well, we need to resist that, because if you don't have an economy, you don't have a community. And that's what's happening all around Alaska. We've lost our private sector self-sustaining economies. We're relying on funding from the government, from federal government, state government, whatever. And that is not a sustainable thing. Typically, they can, you know, legislatures can pull the rug out from under things at any moment. And if you have a self-sustaining economy, whether it be through the fisheries, timber, mining, and you have cheap, abundant energy, you're going to survive. So we have to stay focused on building the economy of Alaska. And, you know, we have everything teed up right now to make that happen. We're going to be, you know, we're going to have to get through some stormy waters for another 5 to 7 years or so before we see the fruits of that. But, you know, we have to keep pushing forward.
Okay.
Yeah.
You brought up energy, and that's another topic I wanted to talk with you. You just came up the hill here from City Hall, so you probably have heard about the solar farm that Wrangell's going to be putting in. I don't know if they talked about that.
We didn't
or
talk
not.
About that as
okay,
much.
Okay. Well, down here in Southeast, it rains a lot. We have hydropower, which is great.
Which is a big deal.
It's a big deal. And but during those summer months, sometimes it does get dry and our reservoir can be low.
Right.
Also in the summertime here in the SEPA, Southeast Alaska Power Agency, so Ketchikan, Wrangell, Petersburg, they need to shut down the turbines once a year for maintenance. And so when that happens, our cities are running on diesel generation.
Generated.
So with the solar farm, we won't have to do that, and it'll save everyone some money. At least that's the thought moving forward. So just talking about energy, that's been a hot topic here in Wrangell. So across the state, whether Southeast Alaska or across the state, what are your thoughts on energy for Alaska to, as you were talking about, build the economy
right
and towards sustainability and success.
Yeah. So again, yeah, energy is so foundational. When you have cheap and abundant energy, and of course, Alaska has that opportunity like much more than any other state. The hydro is ideal. It's expensive to set up. Once it is, though, it requires almost no maintenance, and it lasts. I mean, it's still a mystery as to how long these things will last. I mean, the Hoover Dam, that's been over 100 years now,
right?
And it's just amazing. I mean, if you think about it, it's a form of solar energy. The sun evaporates water, right? Puts it in the sky and clouds, and it rains down and creates a reservoir, which becomes your battery, stored energy, that is then released and turns turbines. Mm-hmm. So it is using that magic fusion reactor in the sky that never takes a break, never goes on vacation. There's no union contracts to negotiate. There's never a strike, right? And it's running 24/7.
Right.
So solar is great. The economics of classic solar with solar panels has improved dramatically in the last 10 years. The cost of solar panels has gone down about 70 to 80% in 10 years. That's what's made it turn the corner of being something that's economically feasible. In Alaska, it's not quite as efficient as it is in, you know, sunny, dry areas like Arizona, et cetera. But it's still worthwhile if you can pair it with storage. You have to have a lot of battery storage to make the maximal use of solar. And in some areas of the state of Alaska, when you're looking at the alternative of either natural gas or hydro, it probably doesn't make a lot of sense. But where it does, you know, we need to be all for it. We need a lot of energy. We need more energy than we could imagine. And one of the economic opportunities in Alaska is not to just harvest our natural resources, but to turn those natural resources into products that go directly to market, right? And that's called the value add, the value added products, right? Like in timber, it would be the kit cabins and different things that you then, rather than just sending the logs out or, you know, certain, you know, raw boards and things, it's the value add. But all value added items are energy intensive, especially in mining. To process the ore and then to further even refine it to the rare earth minerals, that's done in other parts of the world right now, primarily, because it's energy intensive. The technology is there to make it reasonably clean. So there's no reason why we shouldn't be doing these things, providing more high paid jobs for Alaskans right here in Alaska, but it requires massive amounts of energy. So at every opportunity, we need to be saying yes to energy projects. And in South Central, the one big project that has been backburnered, big mistake, was the Sisitna-Watana Dam. And that needs to be brought forth again, and that needs to happen. And, you know, when you are short on energy, it makes a population vulnerable, economically vulnerable. Even in cold winters, it makes survival of a vulnerable situation. So energy is a huge deal. Again, that is one of the two strategic elements of achieving prosperity is cheap and abundant energy. And then the other one is transportation infrastructure, roads, rail, ferries, bridges, tunnels, pipes, moving things. And if you have those two things, and the people that wrote about this and proved this was Kardashev, that was cheap, abundant energy, and von Thunen, transportation infrastructure. If you have those two things, you will be prosperous.
All right. Now, I know from here you're going up to the Wrangell Medical Center, the Search Wrangell Medical Center, yeah, and have a look at that facility. So just wanted to ask you about healthcare. Access to quality healthcare is important to all of us, and it's especially tricky to provide a range of services in rural communities like Wrangell and all over Alaska. Costs are high in rural areas. So what could the state do to support access and affordability of health care for all Alaskans?
The number one thing is, again, economic advancement and achieving prosperity. And when I returned home with my wife and my two kids to practice in Anchorage and Wasilla in 1998, I didn't realize it, but the state was quite prosperous still back then. And there were high-paid job opportunities across all sectors, whether you're a plumber, electrician, attorney, physician. Typically, pay was twice that of your peers in other states. And affordability was not an issue because pay was so high, right? Now, I didn't know that when we were returning home. I was being offered a job at Georgetown, and we had the only grandkids on both sides, and they were all here in Alaska. And we're like, well, we're going back home to Alaska. And it was just by happenstance, it was a great economic opportunity. And so the economics of our state must turn around, and much of these things are solved. So my MBA that I got 6 years ago, it had an emphasis in the economics and business of healthcare, and to understand different systems, what incentivizes health systems to thrive and survive, what crushes them. And there are four elements that need to be a priority in a healthcare system. It needs to be reasonable cost. You don't want it to be free or dirt cheap, because you're going to get very poor quality. So you need reasonable cost. You need quality care. You want it to be state of the art if you can. It needs to be accessible. You shouldn't have to wait months for an appointment. Okay, and that's what having more and more PAs and mid-levels is all about in Alaska. And it needs to be a system that is not so overly burdened with regulation and oversight and all kinds of things that cause burnout of your providers and physicians and nursing. So those four things need to be a priority. And government-run healthcare does not achieve like three out of the four. Okay, quality's hard because the economics are really not there, and the accessibility becomes a problem. So we need to emphasize private sector healthcare if we can. We always have to have that fallback of some kind of hardship healthcare, like a Medicaid-style system, but it needs to be back to what it was meant to be, a fallback for those that can't or have no means. And right now it's expanded to the point of being the largest cost issue for our state is healthcare. And there's a lot of efficiencies that can be gained and a lot of ways that it can be cleaned up. Sadly, there is a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse in healthcare systems, as we're finding out in Minnesota, in California, with that young kid, Nick Shirley, with his iPhone, finding all this fraud. And it's very real, sadly. And Alaska, as much as we take great pride in our people, it doesn't mean that fraud is not occurring. And we've never really gone through a very arduous auditing effort. And that's a big part of what I'm going to do as governor day one, to regain the trust of people and to make sure that our monies are being allocated correctly, not to fraudsters, not to overt waste and abuse, but in healthcare, to clinics that are supposed to be getting that money and directly to the patient care and to the providers, not within layers and layers of administration that has kind of siphoned a lot of the allocation. So economics is the number one thing. Trying to do all we can to help the smaller private healthcare practices to stay alive. People like choices. And I'm sure in this town, it's nice to decide which doctor you want to go to. Maybe there's not as many choices, of course, but that helps with quality. It helps with availability if there's competition.
All right. Well, we are really out of past time. So I just wanted to ask you if there was any other comment you wanted to make before we're done today.
Well, I just want to say what a privilege it's been to tour through here. Like I said, lifelong Alaskan, I'd never been to Wrangell. Have always heard about Wrangell. We're on our way to Petersburg. What a rich, vibrant community that is Wrangell.
Well, thank you so much for coming to Wrangell, and thank you for your time here at KSDK.
Thank you very much for the invitation.